people, thanks to Rome. Yes, and to Britain, Africa.
Yes, we'll transport the man who are constantly moved delivering fighting aircraft.
You know, these men get the planes to their destinations in one piece and on time. Transatlantic flying is a tough, dangerous job, and it takes a lot of cool courage to do what these men are doing.
Folks, men of most of the United Nations wear the uniform of the RAF PC here at Dorval. Perhaps the busiest airport in America. And they are airmen of the United Kingdom, Norway, Czechoslovakia, Poland, China, many, many, many nations. But first, Tim Mayfield seems to know. He's about 36, 37, 38. Stop me. Married, he has three children, and the kind of a man that you'll enjoy spending your time with. He has an important job here at Dorval. Very briefly, your life history.
And believe it or not, I got into the radio business.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And now, the
radio business.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
I got into it the hard way, too.
What do you mean, hard way?
All writing continuity for recorded programs, scrubbing the studio floor.
Uh-huh. Well, what's your job now?
Mr. Center. And we have information on all the different routes we travel, and each crew, as they come through, we give them the information and anything they ask, they want to know.
I thought you were going to tell me some neat little things or sort of off the record. Have you got a few you can tell me that you take over in the briefing room?
Well, we have a few telephone numbers.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I should say, telephone numbers are things that keep away
from. Don't kid me like that. and navigation. You're a navigation officer.
Yes.
Well, I suppose they do most of that with the stars, don't they?
Yes. There is celestial navigation. There's three other kinds, too.
What are the others?
Well, there's VR, or dead reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
There's navigation by radio bearings, and there's ordinary plane mapping.
How close, say you're going from here to England, where you intend to land in England, how close would a navigator have to hit that spot to be a good navigator, say without the benefit of radio?
Well, the furthest I've been off is about 15 miles, but most of our boys seem to get within 2 or 3 miles.
Without radio?
Without radio.
Uh-huh.
No, not without radio. I'd say within 20 miles without radio.
That's just like, that's right on the knob, isn't it?
Yes, very good.
What's the biggest problem in this North Atlantic line?
Well, at the present time, I would say that it's weather, probably.
Weather? Well, what's the most dangerous thing about the weather?
Well, fog and low cloud at the terminal and icing en route, I'd say.
Icing? How do you manage to conquer that?
Well, there's de-ices and there's pilot's own
flying over
judgment in choosing his route so that he doesn't get iced up.
What I can't understand, you've been doing this flying the North Atlantic, this transport command, for 2 or 3 years, and you've had some very bad winters, haven't you?
Yes, we've had 2 very bad winters. One, the worst winter in 40 years, and the other, the worst winter in all history.
And yet you get the plane through?
That's when we deliver the most planes.
Uh-huh. In the winter?
Yes.
Yes. Well, you fly only the North Atlantic?
Oh, no, by no means. No, there's, we have a route around the South Atlantic and routes all over the world. In fact, we have a route all the way to India.
It's a tremendous organization, isn't
it? It certainly is.
I've met some of the world's best pilots since I've been here, too, Captain.
Yes, there are. There's Captain Clyde Pangborn, Captain Jimmy Yule of Imperial Airways, and Bob Furlick and Ralph Adams.
Wait a minute. You could go on forever, I know. Well, Captain, thanks a lot for setting the background out of which the other men who will follow you will work. We know that it's a tough job on this North Atlantic. Now, we discovered that you lack a number 4 and a number 7 iron in that golf bag of yours. Is that right?
How did you find that out?
That's all right. We have our spies. Here you are, your number 7 and your number 4. That, and for Mrs. Smith, wait a minute, boys. We've got a couple other things here. For Mrs. Smith, we've got a beautiful gold dinner ring with 6 amethysts around a lovely pearl in the middle. And here are 5 tickets for you, Miss Smith, and the 3 children to a performance of Gilbert and Sullivan Opera, which opens next week at His Majesty's Theater here in Montreal. Thank you a lot, Captain Smith. And by the way, I want to say one other thing to all the men who are on the show. Warren and I are having a recording made of each man's interview on the show, and we're mailing it to him as soon as it's made.
Well, now, folks, we want you to meet a young American who's 28. He learned to fly during his school days in the States. He was in the Air Corps over there and then a TWA pilot. Early in 1941, he came up here and ferried some of the first planes across. He's still doing it, as a civilian captain for the Royal Air Force Transport Command. From Lake Bluff, Illinois, Captain William Vanderkloot. Bill, what kind of planes do you fly across?
Almost everything, Warren.
You mean practically anything that comes along?
All right.
Well, jack of all trades is flying, yes? Where do you take them?
We take them to Australia, England, India, Africa.
You mean you leave from here for all over the world?
That's right.
Well, do you ever have dinner one place and breakfast the next, you know?
Well, it's very possible to have breakfast in England and lunch in Gibraltar, dinner in Cairo.
It's good going, all right. The world's getting smaller, isn't it? Say, what's this commando plane the men say that you've flown?
Well, it's a Liberator equipped as an aerial taxi.
Aerial taxi? Well, what for?
Well, it's the transportation of government officials, mostly.
Oh, you mean famous men?
Well, yes.
What, have you flown a good many of them?
Yes, I have.
Who?
Well, the Prime Minister of England.
Yeah.
Field Marshal Smuts. Lord and Lady Halifax, General Sikorsky, Dr. Wellington Koo.
Well, you must be sort of a responsibility trying to, when you're taking them somewhere, you have to dodge the Germans and so on?
Well, that accounts for lack of hair.
Oh, that's talking. Well, you have a few left. What are the most interesting flights you ever went on, Bill?
Well, I believe taking the Prime Minister to Russia.
Oh. How was Moscow? What?
Well, it's quite a city, Warren. It's kind of hard to describe, but they certainly treated us very well there.
You mean they showed you real southern hospitality?
Yes, they certainly did. I remember one time when we were gassing our ship, they came up with a truck, unfurled an oriental rug, and heaped three card tables with food to give us a snack while we were gassing the plane.
Yeah, that's all right. They rolled out the red carpet for you, didn't they?
They sure did.
Did Mr. Churchill, the Prime Minister, ever call you in and talk over trips with you?
Yes, he used to the day before we moved.
Mm-hmm.
And one time in particular, when we were in Tripoli, he sent a car for us. He was out in the desert. And they ushered us in a small tent, and inside, seated at a table, was the complete British Imperial staff.
Oh, boy. I mean, you walked in there, I'll bet your mouth fell way down. You must have been very much abashed, so on.
Well, I was about as scared then as I am now.
But yeah.
The Prime Minister sensed the situation in his very gracious way, asked General Montgomery to sign my short snorter bill, which he did. I was very grateful.
Oh, I'll bet you have a short snorter bill. That's really something.
I'm pretty proud of it.
Surely. Well, you're an American boy who's really gone places and seen things. I bet you never thought this was all going to happen to you when you started flying, did you? Well, folks, we just want to tell you that Bill has been decorated with the Order of the British Empire and made a commander of the Order of the British Empire. Now, that's doing all right. And we want to thank you for your interesting story, Bill. We have for you a beautiful sterling silver set of cigarette box, desk model Runciman lighter, and ashtray, all in sterling, and it's from Burke's, Canada's famous jewelers. And for Mrs. Vanderkloot and little 7-year-old Patsy, we have twin identification bracelets in sterling, each with the Royal Air Force crest. We hope you'll like all of them. Thanks, boy.
Okay, Warren, how about tuning up now?
Okay, all right. This is going to be a little bit of a surprise. Bob and Dave, are you in here?
Oh, stop, look and listen. Our train is passing through. So stop, look and listen. It's talking right to you.
Hi there, train. How about passing through once again with that first part?
Mind a headache, three ways.
Yes, that's what we want everybody to know. When you take a Bromo-Seltzer, you fight common sick headache three ways. These three ways.
Bromo-Seltzer gives quick relief from that pain in your head.
Bromo-Seltzer helps settle upset stomach.
Bromo-Seltzer helps calm jumpy nerves.
Now you can take Bromo-Seltzer while it's fizzing or wait till it settles down. Either way, you get effective relief. Feel better fast. Use Bromo-Seltzer only as directed on the label. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor.
But don't go on feeling miserable when it's a common stick headache that's troubling you. Be sensible. Take the advice of our talking Vox Pop train.
Fight the headache three ways.
More from the Royal Air Force Training Command here at Dorville. Now, here's a fighting airman born in India, went to London at 11. He's now 22. He's got 3.5 years back of him in the Royal Air Force. He's earned 2 very coveted medals, a Distinguished Flying Cross and a Distinguished Flying Medal, and he's a veteran of many bombing missions over Germany and enemy territory. He's now in the Training Command, Transport Command of the RAF to fly bombers or other planes back to Britain or wherever they're needed. Folks from London, Flight Lieutenant Dennis Daniel.
You all right?
Yeah. Okay. Dennis, you look just as cool as you must have been under fire. How many bombing missions have you been on?
64.
64?
Yes.
Just sort of glad to be away from such a life?
Well, I am in a way, and yet, on the other hand, it's a very fine life.
What is this?
Squadron.
Is that right?
Yes.
What do you mean by a very fine life?
Well, you meet a lot of very interesting people, and you make some very, very good friends indeed. And somehow there's a spirit about it which I can't explain it, but there just is something.
A man has to be in it to know it, doesn't he? You think you'll ever go back to it?
Well, no, unfortunately. After you do what we call 2 tours of operations, you're taken off and put on rest.
You have done enough, and I don't blame them. You let some of the other fellows take a crack at it. You've done your share. Do you ever see the damage that you do on your raids?
Well, no. It's rather difficult to see because there are usually many hundred bombers going over in front of you, and fire and smoke.
Sort of obscured, I see.
Yes.
Some of the places you've bombed, can you tell me?
Well, Berlin, Hamburg, Dortmund, Essen, Moskva, Munich, Italy, then to occupied France, Brest.
You've done a lot of damage in your time, haven't you? Say, tell me, is it tougher going over or coming back from a target?
Well, it all depends on the conditions, of course, and I think that most of the tough spots are on the way out.
Getting home again.
Getting home.
Say, have you had a pretty lucky ship? How about the men? Have they come
through
all right?
No, we've had a very lucky time indeed, because nobody has been hurt. And,
fine. Let's talk a little bit about that coming back. After you shake the enemy ships and you're on your way home, what do you do? What goes on?
Well, usually after leaving the enemy coast, you sort of relax a bit, you see, and have a very welcome cup of coffee, some chocolate or something like that.
Yes.
And then make your way home as best you can.
When you land, then what?
When you land, you go straight to interrogation, where you're asked a number of questions about everything that happened.
Of course.
And then you go to a very welcome meal of ham and eggs.
Ham and eggs?
Yes, ham and eggs.
Really?
Yes, certainly.
They're very scarce over there, but you fellows really have got them coming to you, haven't you? And then what?
Well, and then you go to bed, which is also a very welcome thing,
too. Well, now, what are you doing here? What do you plan to do here at Dorval?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm here to, I think, ferry Lancasters over to Great Britain.
I understand also that there's another and a new plane, the release on which has just come out today, that you may fly over.
Yes, that's true. We hope very much to get onto the New York.
That's the largest?
It is one of the largest, heaviest carrying classes possible.
It's something that the folks will be reading about tomorrow, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, folks, we're learning that it takes pilots of both experience and character to handle the delivery of these bombers across the dangerous North Atlantic, because it is a tremendously dangerous job. And men such as Flight Lieutenant Dennis Daniel and hundreds of others just like him are doing that every day. Lieutenant Daniel, we have some cool light. First of all, for you, in a heavy leather folding case is an 8-day traveling alarm clock. You may find a need for that. And for your mother in England, a lovely sterling silver compact with an RAF seal on it, of course, and a big box of tinned foods and fruit. And for Dad, there's that Ronson lighter and a carton of his favorite cigarettes. You think they'll like those
things? Well, I certainly do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Folks, you know, as we said before, the Royal Air Force Transport Command is really a United Nations sort of enterprise. As you've heard, Americans fly for it. So do the Dutch, the Norwegians, the French, the Poles, the Czechs, and so on. Now, here's a young Polish officer in the RAF Transport Command who wears the wings of the Polish Air Force and decorations of Poland and the British Distinguished Flying Cross. He's 24 years old and from Lwów, Poland. And because his family is still there, we're not going to give you his last name. Just the first one. It's Flying Officer Joseph. Joseph, did I say Lwów all right? What happened to you when the Germans invaded Poland?
The government sent me to Romania to pick up some planes when I arrived from France.
Mm-hmm. And what happened when you got there?
When I got there, I had the news that Poland fell to the Red End. They sent me to the concentration camp, where I spent about 1 month, and I escaped from there one afternoon.
You just escaped, huh?
Yes, it wasn't difficult.
Well, where did you go then?
I go to Syria, from there to France.
And did you try to rejoin some or to join some Polish squadron?
Yes, I was in France in Polish squadron, but I haven't got the chance to fight because before I get a chance to fight, France already fell.
So then you had to escape from there?
Yes, I escaped from there and I came to England.
Well, I suppose you did. You must have been able to get with some Polish squadrons there.
Yes, I was in Polish squadron, bomber squadron in England.
Well,
fighting with RAF.
Well, how many bombing missions did you make?
I make 37 bombing missions.
37?
Yes.
Well, what cities have you bombed? Do you remember a few?
Yes, Berlin, Bremen, Hamburg, Stettin, Emden, Hamden.
And all
Mannheim,
point cities,
Frankfurt.
You've had some revenge on the Germans, haven't you? We noticed that you're a member of the Goldfish Club. Can you tell us what that is?
Once I washed down over the sea and I spent a few hours on the dinghy. It is a little rabbit bowl.
Oh, oh, so that makes you a member of the Goldfish Club. Say, we've heard, by the way, you're ferrying planes across now. I'd like to ask you if you want to get back into action and bomb Germany some more.
Yes, I do certainly. I would like very much.
Well, we've heard that all the Poles have a special hatred for Germany. How would you say it?
I think everybody which wants to know the German better, they would hate them more.
All who know
the Germans better,
hate them more. Well, that's a good way to put it. We who haven't really suffered from this war can't realize how you and the Norwegians and the Dutch and so on feel. But we mustn't forget what Germany has done to you and would to us, too. We want to thank you, Pilot Officer Joseph, for being with us. And we want you to have a couple of things, a hand-sewn pigskin wallet and a key case to match. And a sterling silver cigarette case. See, Dave has them right over there. And the finest toilet kit we've ever seen. It's an Air Force blue leather. And it has everything that the well-groomed officer needs. It, he even has a silver picture frame in it. You think you'll be able to use them?
Thank you very much. That's very well.
Good luck to you, Joseph.
Thank you.
All right, Bob.
And now we have a special duty to perform for Mr. Louis T. Weber of New Jersey. Okay, Ernest Chappell, front and center.
Yes, sir. Friends, Mr. Weber, right?
I listen to Vox Pop almost every week and enjoy it a lot. But I feel some of your listeners may think Roma Seltzer is a new product, and I'd like to set them straight. I don't know exactly how old it is.
Well, just between us, Mr. Weber, Bromo Seltzer has been on the market for more than 50 years.
Well, my memory of it goes as far back as the gay 90s. I remember how when my dad would get a common sick headache, Mom would mix him a Bromo Seltzer. But what I remember best was the quick, effective relief it always gave him. In just a little while, he'd be feeling much better. Well, here's wishing you the best, both for Vox Pop and for Bromo Seltzer.
Well, thanks a million, Mr. Weber, for writing us that nice letter. And friends, the next time you feel a common sick headache coming on, go to your druggist and ask for Bromo Seltzer. See what effective relief you get. See how fast you feel better. And be sure to write and tell us about your Bromo Seltzer experience. Address your letter to Vox Pop, care of the station to which you are listening. Parks and Warren will be waiting to hear from you.
Yes, folks, we're always looking for your letter. With me now is a 10-year veteran of the Royal Air Force. He has flown practically everything with wings on it, with or without engines. He's the officer who made that historic crossing of the Atlantic in the first glider. You remember last summer, the one that was towed across? Well, he was the man in the glider. Folks, from Chertsey, London, Wing Commander Richard Says. Commander, you look like a married man, are you?
Yes, I am indeed.
Any children?
One.
Where's the family?
Family's here in Montreal. My wife's sitting in the audience here.
Oh, good. She's got her eyes right on you. What are your duties out at the Dorval?
Well, I have two jobs. I'm a staff officer, and I run the experimental glider section.
Uh-huh.
And I also run a rescue section.
Oh, I see. The rescue. I see. Did you get in some fighting when you were with the RAF in the early days?
Yes, I flew bombers in the Middle East, and after I came back to England, I flew night fighters for a short while.
Well, did you have any good luck in that?
No, I only saw one Hun, and damn it, I missed it.
Well, there were a lot of fellows who didn't miss it. Commander, we know only the story of the actual flight. There must have been a lot of hard work that went on behind the scenes. Was it?
Yes, that's so. We worked on this glider flying for a matter of 7 months before we tried the Atlantic crossing.
Took a lot of trial flights?
Yes. We weren't building up to the Atlantic crossing at that time. The Atlantic crossing was merely the next step in the experiments we were doing.
What was the longest hop you took on your test?
On the tests, we did a world's record for a glider flight. It was 1,177 miles.
Gee, that's from here to there and back. Then you got to the Atlantic after all those heartbreaking tests and tough things. I know you landed in blizzards, didn't you, on some of your trial runs?
Well, we did once. We pitched up in a blizzard about 60 miles from Montreal, and we had engine trouble with the towing plane. And I had to cut the glider loose and land it in the snow.
Oh, yes, just a trifle like that. When you flew the Atlantic, the boys know what I'm talking about. When you flew the Atlantic, was your glider heated?
No, we didn't have any heat.
No? Wasn't it cold?
Yes, we got down to about 20 below in spots.
Well, how could you take it?
Well, when the sun came out, it was more or less a glass house, and that was reasonably warm. But
yeah.
When the sun went in, we froze.
Wasn't it rather strenuous staying at the controls all that time?
Well, I had a co-pilot with me, and he took spells with me, and we managed between us to work.
Can we talk a little bit about the future of gliders?
No.
No?
No.
Just leave it in the past?
Yes.
Commander, you know the Atlantic. Give us a word about these men who are ferrying these planes across every day.
Well, I must say, I think they're doing a wonderful job, and I think they're doing a job which a year before the war would have been considered impossible. The whole problem of Atlantic flying was considered to be a stunt, and I don't think it was then realized the tremendous amount of learning which was required to get up to that standard.
More than learning. It takes real stuff inside, doesn't it? Rand, I wish we had more and more time to talk, but we haven't at the moment, so we have some souvenirs of the program for you. First, it's a top ring, custom-built, bridal leather, Montreal to London weekend bag, I'll call it. It's a beauty. I wish I had it myself. And for Ms. Fay's, one of the neatest leather cases filled with manicure tools, polish, and what have you. And for both you and Mrs. Sayes, an album of your favorite operas. That includes Offenbach's Orpheus and Hades and a lot of others. Okay?
I'm absolutely overwhelmed.
Thank you very much, Commander.
Folks, you know, a bush pilot flying up in the North Country really has to know his stuff. Now, here's a former bush pilot, now with the British Overseas Airways, flying for the Royal Air Force Transport Command in much the same way that our airlines fly for the Transport Command over there. He's 34 and from Winnipeg, Captain William May. So, Bill, we understand that the British Overseas Airways flies freight and passengers over and operates a return service, bringing ferry pilots back. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, do you fly both ways?
Yes, we fly both ways.
Well, does it take you long?
Well, not so very long. Matter of fact, my neighbors think that I do it quite quickly. As a matter of fact, they say that I fly to England and back within a week and build a fence around my place.
Well, that's doing a lot in a week. Well, which is easier, going over or coming back?
The return journey from England is always the hardest because we have the adverse winds to combat on the way back.
Headwinds, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you're the one who has to work on the return trip. These ferry pilots, like some of the fellows right here, they just sit in the back seat, huh?
Yes, they, well, not in the back seat, exactly. We have sleeping bags back there in which they curl up in and usually sleep the whole of the return journey.
The lucky dice while you work. Say, how long have you been doing this, by the way?
This is our fourth winter for the operation.
Well, isn't it getting time for you to put on your long underwear?
But just about. Last time I got a little bit of a cold, so I think this next trip I'll put it on.
Uh-huh. Dave, bring them out. We've heard about this weather up here. We've got you a nice set of red underwear.
I think that's very nice.
Say, what sort of food do you carry to munch on?
The food usually consists of lunch boxes in which there are sandwiches and hot thermos bottles go with it.
Well, don't sandwiches get frozen?
Oh, yes, they get frozen. We just take off a hunk and wash it down with a cup of coffee.
Melt it in your stomach.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, can you tell us about some of your freight cargo going over? I don't mean the regular stuff you carry, but is there anything extraordinarily interesting?
Well, about this time of year, we're carrying turkeys and cranberries for the American troops overseas.
For their Thanksgiving?
For their Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to which, there are the records and films.
You mean for their entertainment?
For their entertainment as well. In addition to which, of course, when England was short of farm implements, we were carrying farm implements.
Well, you mean so they could become more self-sufficient in food?
That was the idea, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful cargo you're taking, in addition to all of the regular war cargo. Say, you know, I just was thinking, we can sort of see you up there in the darkness for hours, watching that instrument panel in front of you, Bill. What do you think about?
Well, the first thing is mainly the safety of the aircraft. When everything is running smoothly, I usually think of the little odd jobs I have to do at home.
Oh, you mean you forgot to fix that bureau drawer that was stuck?
Yes, I always seem to forget it.
Well, we're glad to talk to you, Captain Bill May. We'll have to present you with your gifts right now as time is running out. We have a Taylor storm guide, a combination barometer and thermometer for you, so you can tell what the pressure is without calling the airport. And for Mrs. May, we have a black quilted house coat with pink satin lining, and it'll look very fetching in the light of this bridge lamp we found out you wanted to go next to your easy chair. And if she wants to see how she looks in the house coat, here's a nice big octagonal wall mirror. And wait a minute. I just want to tell you that for you, don't forget, for you as well as for all the others on Box Pop tonight and from now on, we have a recording of your interview that we're going to send to you so that you can play it and listen to yourself.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yes, folks, we wish we could spend more time with these men of the Royal Air Force Transport Command, but Vox Pop must travel on.
You know, we have a 27-hour train ride ahead of us, and our destination is Halifax, Nova Scotia, because there we'll talk with the sailors of the Royal Canadian Navy who have fought and suffered in the Battle of the North Atlantic.
Folks, if you've seen the new Howard Hawks movie, Corvette K-225, filmed with the cooperation of the Royal Canadian Navy, you know the hazards of keeping our North Atlantic sea lanes free from the enemy U-boat menace, so that our convoys can get through. Next Monday, we'll talk with these heroes of the Battle of the North Atlantic. So don't miss Vox Pop. Night, folks.
So long, everybody.
The appearance of Royal Air Force personnel on this broadcast does not necessarily constitute endorsement of our product, as Royal Air Force regulations do not permit the endorsement of any product.
Here's an important message for every grade school and high school, boy and girl in America. The Junior Red Cross needs your services to help carry on the great work they're doing. You can enroll through your school class. Your teachers have all the information. So ask about it tomorrow at school and get your whole class behind the Junior Red Cross, your own special Red Cross division. Be sure to join Vox Pop, the show that travels America, next week when it visits Halifax, Nova Scotia. And also remember...
Fight headache three ways!
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. If you're over 18 years of age, CBS invites you to...